At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
It's Culinary Corner time, and we're going to be talking about the Meathead Method today, a barbecue hall of famous secrets and science on barbecue grilling and outdoor cooking. Welcome to the show, Meathead.
Hello, Selena. Pleasure to be with you.
Pleasure to have you. What a great name. So this is all about the science of barbecuing and grilling, I believe.
Well, all cooking is science. You just step in the kitchen, you begin a chemistry and a physics experiment. Heat changes the construction of protein and fat and all the stuff that's in food. When you cook outdoors, a lot of people, particularly men who dominate outdoor cooking in my country, they just throw food on the grill, and I've tried in my books to explain what's going on under the hood of that grill, what happens when heat interacts with protein, what is smoke, what is fire. So these are all interesting concepts that I try to explain.
Yeah, interesting stuff. And it's interesting that it is normally the men, isn't it? It's the same in England, I'm sure in Spain as well, which makes me think this is a great book for Father's Day.
Yes, thank you. I couldn't agree more.
Perfect for Father's Day. So you can learn the basics of great barbecuing, grilling and griddling, but there's also 114 recipes in there. And you can build your own rubs and sauces. Now, when you say rubs, that's sort of herbs that you rub onto the meat?
These are spice blends. We call them in the barbecue world rubs, because you kind of rub them on the meat, but it's a spice blend, just like the many spice blends that are on your grocery store shelf. They amplify flavors. What's interesting about rubs and spice blends, and a lot of people don't know this, is they don't penetrate. The molecules in a spice blend, or in spices, pepper, garlic, sugar, they're too large to go very far deep into the meat. There's little tiny cracks and crevices in the surface that they can penetrate, maybe a 16th of an inch. But salt is the only one that can go deep into the meat. Salt is the magic rock. Salt is just two atoms, sodium and chloride. And when they get wet on the surface of the meat, they get an electrical charge. It's called ionization. And they can actually migrate deep into the meat. It takes a long time. But salt does marvelous things to food. It amplifies the flavor. It denatures the proteins, which means it changes the shape of protein inside the meat and helps protein hold on to moisture. So when you apply a spice mix or a rub, the salt will go deep, but the rest of the stuff stays on the surface.
How interesting. I just thought salt made things taste better. Clearly not. And how do we stop some food sticking to the metal? Are we not putting enough oil on it?
Oh, it is tricky. Now, you don't want to put foil down, because you want to expose the food to the flame and to the smoke. And a lot of people do. They lay the foil down. Foil is still metal. It's going to stick. The protein will adhere to hot metal, but eventually it'll let go. So the trick is you put the food down and you wait for it to let go. If you try to lift it and it's still stuck, leave it there. It's not going to burn. But the best technique that'll help it release is to oil the food. A lot of people oil the grill grates or the metal which is okay, but then it changes the structure of the oil. It's called cracking, and it cracks the oil and changes the structure and changes the flavor. And in fact, it can even start it smoking. But if the foods, let's say if it's a steak or something, is cold, if you apply the oil to the food, it won't crack so quickly, and it will help it release. But here's a really interesting trick. Fish is the worst. Fish is absolutely the worst. It just, it's almost impossible to keep it from sticking. What I do with fish is I use a little gadget. It looks like two tennis rackets hinged at the top, and you put the fish inside. So you turn the device rather than the fish. That works pretty well. But mayonnaise. Mayonnaise is a suspension of oil and egg and maybe a little lemon juice or vinegar. But for some chemical reason, mayonnaise helps the fish release from the metal. Wow. And it doesn't leave a funny flavor. I know there's a lot of people who don't like mayonnaise, but it doesn't leave a flavor. So if you've got fish and you're worried about it sticking, either get one of those little gadgets that'll cradle the fish or slather it with mayonnaise.
That is such a great tip. I love that. And I love mayonnaise, so I can try that next time. And what meathead is dry brining?
Ah, dry brining is a term I coined. It's been around for years, but nobody had given it a name until I called it dry brining. Brining is a technique of applying salt to food. I mentioned earlier how salt is the magic rock, how salt penetrates, how salt amplifies flavor, how salt helps hold on to moisture. Now, a lot of people will brine by mixing salt with water, and there's a formula for getting the right ratio, and then they submerge the food in it. It's pretty good for things like pork loin or turkey breast, chicken breast that are very lean, that don't have fat. Fat contributes extensively to moisture feel, mouthfeel. But if you've got a very lean, dryish piece of meat, brining it by submerging it in a salt water bath helps the salt penetrate and do its magic. But it takes up a lot of space. A turkey, for example. The tub, you got to put the turkey in and you put it in your fridge. It just takes up all the room in the fridge. No, you can just apply the salt directly to the food. It's dry. You don't have to submerge it in liquid. Sprinkle salt on the food, the same amount you would if you were serving it at the table. A rule of thumb is a half a teaspoon of Morton's coarse kosher salt, which is the standard salt I use because it doesn't have a lot of ingredients in it, or a quarter teaspoon of table salt. Sprinkle it on there on the surface and give it time. It'll take an hour or so for it to penetrate into a steak or a chicken thigh, a couple of hours for a chicken breast, overnight for a turkey. But you got to give it time, and the salt will penetrate and do its magic, and you don't have to submerge it in a vat of salt water.
Wow, interesting. And you mentioned about the rubs and the sauces we can put on the meat. What about basting, like butter basting?
Ah, basting is interesting. It has pros and cons. One of the tricks, the things that is important to learn if you're cooking on a grill or indoors for that matter, is back down on the heat. We cook too hot, particularly guys. We go out there, we pound our chest. We're gonna burn some meat today. Back down. When you apply heat to meat or other foods, the proteins shrink and squeeze out the moisture, so you lose moisture and tenderness. So if you reduce the heat, you'll get a more moist and tender. It takes a little longer to cook, but it works a little better if you dial back on the heat. So you want to get a crust. And so there's a technique that we call reverse sear. And it works well on thick steaks and pork chops, skinny pieces of meat, like a skinny steak. You do want to cook it fairly hot and fast to get that nice dark brown crust. The dark brown crust is a chemical reaction called the Maillard reaction, and it changes the molecules and it changes the flavor and it gives it more flavor. Everybody knows that the end cut on a roast is always the most flavorful because it's got all the dark brown surfaces. So reverse sear is an interesting technique. If, say, you've got an inch and a half, 2 inch thick steak, if you put it on over a high heat, the surface will brown. Then you'll have a layer underneath that's tan. Then you'll have a layer underneath that's pink. And then you'll have finally in the center that nice rosy medium rare color. And we know that at medium rare, it is the most tender and juicy. And that's a rosy color. Gosh, I don't know my centigrade numbers as well as I should.
Don't worry.
But it's 130 to 135 Fahrenheit, right, in that range.
Right.
And that's medium rare. So you get this rainbow effect where only about a third or a half of the meat is perfectly cooked. If you dial back the heat and gently warm it, it will be more even color. And when it gets to, say, 125 Fahrenheit, almost finished, then you put it over high heat and sear the surface, lift the lid so warm air isn't coming in from above, and you'll get your perfect, perfect steak.
So if you're talking about medium rare, would that to you be bloody or just pink?
It's kind of a rosy color. Okay. Well, first of all, there's no blood in meat. In this, that when you buy meat in the store, it has been slaughtered and drained of all blood. That pink liquid that you see when you cut a steak, or even in the tub when you buy a chicken or something, that pink liquid is a protein substance mixed with water.
We call it myoglobin. Never knew
it's that. Myoglobin. Mm. Myoglobin is a type of protein. We call it myo water. There's no blood in there. And think about it. What animal blood is like your blood? It's very dark. It's very thick. When it hits air, it starts to thicken even more. It coagulates. Those pink juices come out of a steak or a chicken when you cut into it. They're very thin. They're watery. They're runny. They never coagulate. It's just, it's like 99% water and a small amount of myoglobin, which is pink. And what's interesting is when you heat myoglobin, it goes from rosy or pink to tan. And that's what happens when you overcook a piece of, say, a steak. It goes from almost purple when it's raw to rosy when it's medium rare to tan when it's well done. And that's because the myoglobin in the meat is changing color.
Blimey, how interesting is that? Now, what if you wanted to do something? We've mentioned fish and we've mentioned meat. What if you wanted to do like a Thai dish, if you wanted to cook with a wok, for example?
Oh, that's so much fun. You know, I love cooking with it. I love Asian foods. The problem that I've always struggled with is I've got a really nice wok. I put it on top of my gas stove indoors, and it's just not as good as it is at that Chinese and Thai restaurant. And the reason is it doesn't have enough heat. And so what happens is the meat starts to cook and it starts spilling out its water. It gives up its water. So instead of stir frying, you end up kind of braising the meat. It's delicious, but it's not quite the same. If you've ever gone into a Chinese or a Thai restaurant or seen a video on YouTube, they cook with a wok over a ring of gas flame that is extremely hot. I mean, if you leave a wok on there long enough, it'll even start to glow. So how do you get that kind of heat? And one day I'm outside starting up my charcoal grill, and the best way to start charcoal is using a device called a chimney. And it looks like a big coffee can with a handle on it. And you put your charcoal in it, and you light it from below, and the charcoal is all bunched up so it gets nice and hot in there. And then you can dump it out and cook, and you've got nice glowing coals. But as I'm watching, it's around dusk, and I notice there's this blue flame coming out of the top of this charcoal chimney. I mean, it looks like the back end of a jet. And it dawns, I go running for my thermometers. I got thermometers out the wazoo. And I stick one in there. It's over 1,000 degrees. So I grab my wok and I put it on top, and I've got another thermometer, one of these gun thermometers. And that wok is roaring hot. So I start cooking my stir fry on top of a charcoal chimney. It's equivalent in heat to the Chinese restaurant burners. It's massive heat. It's fantastic. And I cover this technique in the book. There's a couple of little tricks. If you're cooking on a wok for a long time, the wok will smother the charcoal down below. So you gotta drill a couple of holes near the top of the wok to let oxygen in. But other than that, it's a tremendously effective way to cook on top of a grill outdoors. There are all kinds of stuff that I've done in the book that people don't think of you can do outdoors. For example, fried chicken. I don't know how fried chicken is over by you, but here in the States, it's very popular.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, everybody loves fried chicken. If you cook it on your stovetop indoors, it spatters all over the stovetop, all over the counter, on the floor. It sets off the smoke alarms. It stinks up the house. I do all that on my gas grill. You get a Dutch oven. Pour about 2 inches of oil in it. Get it up to 375. That's your magic number for any kind of deep frying. 350 to 375 Fahrenheit, sorry. And you get it up to that temperature, and you can deep fry in it. And who cares if it smokes outdoors? Who cares if it spatters? And it's not going to catch your grill on fire. It's in a big old heavy Dutch oven. You're not going to knock it over. And when the chicken is done, you just take it out and you put it off to the side. The burners are off on one side, on the other side. And they just stay there and stay warm. Fantastic. Whoever thought of just, you can cook on a wok outdoors. You can deep fry outdoors. All kinds of fun stuff you can do with grills.
It's wonderful. And of course, over here in Spain, we can do that because we have the weather.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Well, you were right when you sent me a message and said, are you sure we'll have enough time? I could talk to you for much longer, but sadly we're out of time. For our listeners, you can buy the book right now on our website, tre.radio. It's called The Meathead Method, A Barbecue Hall of Famer's Secrets and Science on Barbecue, Grilling and Outdoor Cooking. It is perfect for Father's Day, and it's by Meathead, who we're chatting to now. Now, Meathead, you're also the founder of AmazingRibs.com. What's that?
How nice of you to mention that. Thank you. Yes, it's a website. It's the largest and most popular barbecue and grilling website, and it's got a lot of this stuff in there. I love books. I'm an old man, and I was raised reading books, and books are wonderful because they have a beginning and a middle and an end. Mm. Websites, you parachute in, and you don't know where you land, and you're kind of feeling your way around. But a lot of this information can be found on AmazingRibs.com. It's just not as easy. It's not as well organized, and there's a lot of new stuff. Most of the recipes are not on the website, and there's some good recipes.
Excellent. Well, I certainly am looking forward to getting the book. I can think of a few people that would like to read that. Meathead, do come on the show with us again. There's much more to chat about, but thank you for joining us today.
I'm at your service. Anytime you want me, you know where to find me.
Bless you. Take care. Bye-bye.